All right, let's get rolling here on this week's episode of the Extra Point Podcast. Hey, welcome back. Glad you've taken time to listen, to tune in. Really glad you've jumped on board. My name's Todd Stiles. I'm one of the pastors at First Family Church. And today is Tuesday, August 20th, and we're going to be looking back at last week's text and bringing some further insight and application to this idea of work. You could use the word jobs. We used both interchangeably Sunday, but really, I want to take some time in this podcast to enlarge that focus because, as I said, I do think work is larger than your job. And so I want to take some time in this podcast to explain how that's true. You may could even say I want to provide for us a theology of work, not in its entirety, but at least some things about work that come to us from the Lord and how to view it appropriately and rightly. And so glad you've tuned in. Let's dig right in, shall we? As I was thinking about this idea of work and, the whole idea that it's bigger than our jobs, and I was reminded of how I got my first job when I really entered the workforce officially. I wasn't driving yet, so I'm not sure if I was 14 or 15, but we lived in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and there was a fast food restaurant that had a sign out, and it said now hiring or, applications wanted, something like that. All I remember is that my mother would say to me, she would say, you should go up there and apply. And so out of obedience, one day I did. I wasn't opposed to getting a job, but I probably wasn't looking that heartily. But I applied one day, came home, and she said, well, did they hire you? And I said, no, they said they'll look at the application. She said to me, go back tomorrow and ask if they've looked at it. And so I said, well, that seems a little rushed, but I'll do it. So I obeyed. I came back the second day, came back home, and she said, did they hire you? And I said, no, they said they're still looking at the application. And she said to me, they're going to tell you that every day. You go back every day and ask if they've seen it, and then ask if you can have a job. So I did that. I think I went about 5 or 6 days, and I'm not sure the exact details, but I know that I went several days in a row. And in all honesty and candor, on that last time, the manager's name, I believe, was Daryl. Daryl looked at me. He's kind of a big guy, dark hair. He looked at me. He said, well, you obviously want a job, so I'll hire you. And he hired me on the spot, and I began work the next week. And I'll always thank my mom for the insight and the fortitude to really help me understand how most people get jobs. They probably bug the employer enough to where they hire you, at least when you're young. And it paid off. I worked there at least several years. So anyway, I just thought of that story, my first official entrance into the workforce. I had mowed yards before that in the neighborhood and did things of that sort. But that was my first actual job. And I'm thankful that my mom really was the kind of mother to encourage me to keep a determined spirit to finding one. So that was when I first entered the workforce. That's a story about my beginning as a worker, so to speak. But work is far bigger than our jobs. And so let me first of all give a definition of work, which will show that it's bigger than our jobs, because we can actually be involved in work. We can accomplish things outside of an actual situation where there's an employment. Now, here's the definition of work from the dictionary. It's activity involving mental or physical effort done in order to achieve a purpose or result. So pretty plain, straightforward. But if I were to put that into an equation form, and so here for my mathematical friends, here's how I would say it. I think work is energy plus material plus need, and then what results is work. So you combine these things together. There's energy. There's material, and it could be ideas, it could be, actual physical components, but there's material with energy, and then you're usually meeting a need. What that produces then is work, because you see a gap or an opportunity or a situation, and so you exert energy with specific materials, and you meet a need, and then that's actually the work. And sometimes it's a product produced or it's an idea established. It may be momentum gained. Lots of things we can think about as what work is, but this is really what brings about work. And so that is bigger than a job. A job may be something you obtain and that you are then compensated for when these things are in play, energy, material, and need. But you can see this happen even if you're not compensated. This happens in homes. It happens in our hobbies. That work is expended because we are people with a spirit of industry. God has created us to accomplish things, to, and this word's used rightly here, to produce. You could say manufacture, to create. This is part of what God designed in us. And so that, in a word, is called work. So let me provide for you 5 points of theology about work. I gave you 5 things about how to work on Sunday, the manner in which we work. I want to give you 5 things in this podcast about work itself, things we know are true about work, maybe how to believe correctly about work. And some of these will seem obvious, some may not. But let's just begin with this first one, which I think will be a little humorous, but here's the first thing about work. It is not the curse, all right? God didn't punish Adam in the garden for his sin, Genesis 3. He didn't punish Adam with work. Work had already been assigned. We call it the dominion mandate, or you could say it's the first commission to be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth, and exercise dominion over creation. That is the work mandate. That is exactly what we are to do. The curse involves the fact that that work would be difficult. So I often say this, that the curse involves weeds, not work. And of course, that was a very agricultural situation in those days of the garden. And so it makes sense that the language used is about how there will be thorns, there will be thistles, and it will be hard to get the ground to cooperate with you now. This is the curse. Again, the curse is not work. The curse is weeds, so to speak. And so just keep this in mind as you think about your life and the season of life you're in, your occupation, what you're doing, whether it's pre-employment days or post-employment days, however you're looking at it, the goal in life is not to get out of work, because work is central to who we are in lots of ways. Though you may not be employed or compensated or have a job, work is actually part of our life. It's not the curse. It actually is a compliment and something we should embrace as part of being a human. Observation number 2, work is more than your job. Now, this is a little repetitive, so I won't stay here long. I mentioned it Sunday. But I want to say to you that work is an aspect of life. It is an act of obedience. This is clearly seen, again, like I said, in the garden. But also Proverbs talks a lot about industry and diligence and not being lazy. And so just keep this in mind. Yes, your job is work, but work is more than your job. Dads and moms, when you're done at work, after you've clocked out, there'll be work at home. There'll be work on the weekends. Raising kids is work. Living with parents, children, this is work. And so there's energy and material to meet a need in almost all aspects of our life. Fixing meals, maintaining cars, studying for tests, these all require work, and that is actually a good thing. And it's why work is more than your job. Number 3, work is an avenue towards and evidence of maturity. You'll find this to be something that Proverbs talks about a good bit, that maturity or a wise life is seen by those who are diligent, not by those who are lazy. Proverbs connects laziness and slothfulness with the foolish person. And the foolish person throughout the book of Proverbs is always depicted as the person who doesn't know how to live. They're immature. They're making very immature decisions, and they're choosing unwise choices. These are characteristics of the person who's not learned how to live in a mature fashion, whereas the diligent person, one of the phrases used in Proverbs is this, he that plows his land or tills his land. There's many metaphors for diligence. He talks about ants and how they work. that's the description of a wise person, the person walking in the way of wisdom. And so work is connected to not only maturity in a sense that it's an evidence of it, it is actually an avenue towards it. This is one of the reasons many parents so believe in chores. When we start kids early, we assign responsibility. It's usually small. And then incrementally that grows. Why? Because we're teaching kids that this is really how life, no pun intended here, how life works. Now, there are responsibilities we engage in. Typically, an amount of freedom is connected to an amount of responsibility. These things go together. And we teach kids at a young age how trust is also given and earned. And of course, this is through things like chores, responsibilities, expectations. So just keep this in mind. Work is this avenue towards maturity, but it's also an evidence of maturity. As I was thinking through this point, I was reminded of a pretty humorous story. When Brett was working at his, I think maybe first or second job, most of our kids worked in fast food at some point. Brett's initial experience was at Burger King there on First Street. And I think it was a Saturday. I'm not sure. I don't think he was driving it either. Maybe he was, but he woke up and he was not scheduled to work that day. And so he was pretty happy. I think he was thinking he might get to do some things with some friends or maybe at home on his own. And somewhat early in the morning when he got up, I remember Julie asking him, are you scheduled to work today? And he said, no, I'm not. And she said, why don't you go up there and see if you can? And he paused for a moment, looked at her, and she wasn't grinning or kidding. And she said, no, seriously, just go up there and see if you can work. It'd probably do you good. And so he obeyed. I think he got on his bike. Maybe he walked, but maybe he drove. I'm not sure of the age. But anyway, he did that. He went up there and they looked at him kind of oddly, almost like the guy looked at me when I was applying for that job for the eighth time. They looked at Brett and they said, well, if you're here, you might as well work. And so they put him in the back and they put him to work. And he tells that story funnier than I can relay it. But I think about that as a moment in which he learned, yes, even spontaneously, that work is part of life and it's an evidence of an avenue towards maturity. I would even say to you, in that moment, he probably grew up a good bit, not only through his obedience to his mother, when he probably didn't understand or even didn't like it, but just knowing that what came from that, that he maybe did not expect, you know, some extra money that he wouldn't have expected, or who knows all that came from that. I'm just saying it's a pretty funny anecdote that reminds me that work and maturity, they really do go hand in hand in at least a couple of ways. It's an avenue for it and an evidence of it. A fourth observation in this theology of work, at least this small rendition of it, work is a representation of God's creative and diverse wisdom, and it's a platform for the gospel. Now, of course, we saw Sunday that Christ's preeminence should be so strong in our life that our job should not be considered this, you know, secular thing that can't be touched by God, but that even in our job, our work environments, there are sacred moments, sacred implications, sacred results, sacred opportunities. And it's because in those moments, we get to see just how diverse God has made people, the various skills and abilities that he gives people. And so as we watch people work in a variety of ways, sometimes on the same project or on multiple projects, our hearts and our minds should lean into the Creator who has given these gifts and variety of skills to his creation. So when you're working and you see other people working and you're spotting all the various talents in play at various moments, use it as a platform for the gospel. And there's, you know, good ways to do this. There's also not good ways to do this. I just want to encourage you that the diversity in how God has made people, you know, there are medical experts, there's IT inventors, there's construction architects, there's bankers, there's writers, there's artists. There's so many types of things that are considered work. There's so many ways to expend energy to meet a need and develop a product or further an idea, to invent. It's fantastic. And these should not point to some evolutionary process that we're evolving. Quite frankly, apart from God, we would be devolving. It's God who has instilled in us the desire to be rightfully ambitious, to create, to invent, to solve problems. And it's God who gives skills and abilities and talents to do exactly that. So when you see good work, realize that is a representation of God's creative and diverse wisdom. And then use that as a platform to talk about the Lord, to share the gospel, to point people to our very creative and ingenious God. Here's the fifth one, our final one. Work is a contribution to civilization. In other words, societies flourish when work is prioritized. Where you find entitlements, where you find incentives to not work, you will always find societies and civilizations decreasing in the way they value people as well as what people can be responsible for. Handouts are not a good thing as a normal way of life. The Bible records and documents for us that working is actually one of the ways that we contribute not only to a family, but to a society or civilization at large. Proverbs teaches this. Even the Thessalonian epistles, I think, twice talk about how it's spiritually healthy to work with your hands, to mind your own business, to do your job, so to speak. Later, he would say that if a man doesn't work, he shouldn't eat. So there's something about work. Remember, it's bigger than your job. It's an embracing of using industry and effort and creativity with materials, whether physical or mental, to solve a problem or meet a need. That's work. And there's benefit in that to a society at large. Work is a contribution to civilization. When you work, you're actually furthering the good of a culture and of a civilization. Now, let me bring some research to this that I think will be quite intriguing just before I close. I just reviewed a book by Brad Wilcox. When I say reviewed, I reviewed it for myself personally. I listened to an interview with the author, and then I picked the book up, looked at it, and I'm looking forward to reading it. The book is called Get Married. That's the essential title of it. Here's the subtitle, which is really what drew my attention. Why Americans Must Defy the Elites, Forge Strong Families, and Save Civilization. And so it's a great subtitle. I love the main title, Get Married. Brad Wilcox is a professor and a researcher, and what he does in this book really is show the saving power. And I mean that from a not from a salvific point of view, but just the culture-saving power of marriage and families who work together and who promote conservative values about these institutions. In fact, he promotes what's known as the success sequence. You could Google that. You'll find more about it. He didn't invent this. He did promote it. He's given more definition to it. It's probably a sequence or an idea that was birthed in the 70s, perhaps a little earlier, but several studies have been done over the decades proving the reliability of what's known as the success sequence. And here's what the success sequence is. The success sequence is research that shows that there are three things fundamental to a flourishing civilization or society. Again, several studies over several decades consistently show this. In Brad's words, and he uses these three words to kind of sum up the study, they are education, work, and marriage. But let me tell you how you've probably heard this before, because I don't think this idea of the success sequence is probably new to you. Here's what here's how it's been worded in the past, that for those who get at least a high school degree, that's the education component. For those who get a full-time job, that's the work component. And for those who get married before having children, that's the marriage component. Now, catch this. Studies have shown that when those three things are in that sequence, 97% of the young people who follow that sequence don't end up broken or poor. Now, they didn't promise riches. They didn't promise, you know, easy street, to use our culture's vernacular. It simply says this. 97% of young people who follow that sequence don't become dependent upon the government or someone else. And so they would use the words in the study, they're not poor. And I think that's a fantastic study. It no doubt falls in line with scriptural wisdom, but it shows us that work is part of the equation to a flourishing civilization. Again, what Brad would call education, work, and marriage. That's the success sequence. And so if you really want to continue to lead your kids in the right way so that they don't end up dependent or broke, here's a good, biblically based trajectory. Get a good education. Proverbs will talk about hearing your parents, learning, having an ear for those in authority over you, and taking in knowledge. Of course, this is all based on the fear of the Lord, but let's not be afraid of the call to educate our children, to learn, to be curious, to seek out answers. And then, of course, work, getting a full-time job at some point, just entering the workforce and being productive, creative, industrious. Work, even bigger than your job, does matter to our human existence. And then, of course, getting married before having children, just following the Bible's instruction about this relationship. Those three things, with biblical support, have proven for decades, based on research and principles, to really make to make a large difference in how much a society flourishes. And notice that one of those elements is the idea of work. So again, I just say to you, when you're working, whether it's compensated or not, but when you exert energy and material to meet a need, when you're working, you are helping the country, the civilization, the society in which you live flourish. So let me just simply say, in light of these five nuggets that relate to a theology of work, even with the humorous anecdotes and the different rabbit trails I might have chased, I think it's safe to say the Bible calls us to a positive attitude about work and to a proper response in regards to our jobs, which are part of work, and to doing them in the fear of the Lord, to doing them in the sight of the Lord, and doing them for the glory of the Lord. And so let's get to work. Let's consider this a positive call to action to get to work in order to make a difference in the lives of others.
Thanks for listening to the Extra Point Podcast. To find more content and resources to grow deeper in your relationship with Jesus, go online to firstfamily.church/resources.